This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And this is Deborah Bell. And this is Queer Voices for Monday, June the 5th, 2006. We have from Washington tonight, David Elliott with his Inside the Beltway and Beyond report. Linda Inger of the Bayou City Women's Chorus represents the group to talk about their premiere concert taking center stage on Saturday, June the 17th. The Houston Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender, and Political Caucus at PAC. Endorsed candidate Ellen Cohen will discuss her campaign for State District 134 with Jennifer Renee and Greg Chapman, who just joined us in the studio.
Hello.
Joan Devlin will interview Ben Omart, author of Hold That Joan, the biography of comedian Joan Davis. And Joan will also discuss the book Gay Marriage, For Better or For Worse, What We've Learned from the Evidence, with the authors William Eskridge and Darren Spidell. Paul Scott of Equality Texas will talk about plans for Texas Pride in Austin this weekend. Plus, This Way Out from, News Wrap from This Way Out.
It's easy for you to say, isn't it?
Yeah, apparently. News Wrap from This Way Out and much, much more. So stay with us.
But first we have from the Houston Pride Festival artists for this year, Taylor Dane and his song, Tell It to My Heart.
Emotion overload.
is Queer Voices.
Well, we're always gender-bending around here, aren't we, Jennifer?
Yes, I thought Taylor Dane was a female.
Well, apparently Glenn got a little confused by the name, because Taylor's one of those names that can be either male or female.
Well, if you ever saw her, you would not make any mistake.
Or maybe she just would be a very convincing transgender.
Well, she could have been, but, I mean, I don't know. I'd do her.
Uh-oh. What's that language?
Oh, I'm sorry. We are on the air. Oh, no, we're not on the air, are we? And it's just us folks sitting here.
Yeah, and the three listeners. Actually, we have our good friend David Elliott on the line from Washington, D.C., and he's going to be using some very strong language tonight. Yeah. Hi, David.
Well, good evening, Deb, and hello, Queer Voices. How are y'all tonight?
We're doing good.
We're doing good.
Well, I got a trivia game I'd like to play with you, if I may.
Okay, let's go ahead.
Okay, we got $3.
Wait, don't tell me.
No. We got $3 gasoline prices.
Mm-hmm.
We've got an immensely unpopular war in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
We've got scandals all over the place, some Democrat, mostly Republican. And so what are we talking about in Washington, D.C. today?
And don't forget the health care crisis.
Well, like, there's the health care crisis, there's the job outsourcing crisis, there's the immigration quote-unquote crisis, crises everywhere you look. But what are we talking about today,
Deb?
But
the really pressing issue in Washington, D.C. is, does anyone know?
Gay marriage.
Bingo, give that boy the prize.
That was Jennifer.
That was me.
I'll add flag burning.
Folks, flag burning is next week, okay?
Oh, okay.
This week is same-sex marriage. The U.S. Senate is currently debating.
You win the prize, Jennifer. You get David Elliott's voice on your answering machine.
Oh, good.
Okay. You know what that's about, don't you, David?
I do not.
You don't? Okay. You don't listen to Wait, Don't Tell Me on NPR, then.
Okay. Well, the U.S. Senate is debating the anti-gay federal marriage amendment as we speak. They're going to debate it again tomorrow. They're going to debate it again Wednesday, and then on Wednesday they're going to vote. And I have a couple of quotes I'd like to read you. President Bush today said that he is, quote, proud to stand with those who support a constitutional amendment to ban same-sex marriage. Now, the funny thing about that is that a bunch of religious leaders who were called to Washington to support the president either didn't show up or they were hidden off camera. If you watched this event today on C-SPAN, they were positioned so that, you know, the religious right leaders were nowhere to be seen on camera. And you might ask why.
Why?
Well, as a matter of fact, I want to ask why.
You know, there's this guy named Joe Glover. Glover. Funny name. Okay. He's president of the Family Policy Network. And he's opposed to same-sex marriage. He's a religious right leader. And he said, quote, I'm going to go and hear what the president says, but we already know it is a ruse. We're not buying it. We're going to go and watch the dog and pony show, but it's too little, too late. And consider this quote from Gary Glenn, who is head of the Religious Right American Family Association. He said, social conservatives are disappointed that there hasn't been more action on the issues that were highlighted in the 2004 election. Increasingly, social conservatives expect real action, not just politically timed attempts to motivate and organize the base. And so we see that even as the Republicans pull out this rather cynical, this rather laughable, this rather disingenuous, this rather, oh gosh, I run out of adjectives, okay? this incredibly hypocritical effort to rally the base and try to, you know, spur on and encourage the base to turn out and vote in the November elections.
And didn't he do this before a select audience?
Oh, absolutely. Religious conservatives. But we
heard he was interrupted 10 times with applause.
But, you know, when we look at these quotes from some of the religious right leaders, we can see, fool me once, shame on... Well, I always get
no, this. Well, you and Bush both. Shame,
I got this wrong.
Shame me
last.
Once, shame on you. I mean, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Well, thank you, Deb. Thanks. I get that wrong every month. But, you know, there's been action from the other side of the fence, so to speak.
And what might that be?
Well, our guys are sitting up and taking notice. There is a blog activist by the name of John Erivosis.
And oh, yes.
I'm probably butchering that, the pronunciation.
I think that's close.
Of that name. He put out an action alert today, where and his blog is read by thousands and thousands of lesbian and gay, bisexual, transgendered people every single day. It's a very, very highly trafficked blog. He's a leader in the LGBT blogosphere, if you will.
What's the name of his blog?
It is America Blog.
Okay, thanks.
AmericaBlog.com, and today he writes, I'd like you to call the offices of the members of Congress who support the gay bashing marriage protection amendment and demand to know if they and their staff are protecting marriage in their own lives. In a nutshell, he says, the religious right and far-right Republicans have said repeatedly that the, quote, gay marriage, unquote, battle is really about outlawing sodomy, masturbation, adultery, prostitution, out-of-wedlock sex, marriages that cannot procreate. He says, we at America Blog could not agree more. That's why we are asking our readers to contact members of Congress who support the anti-gay constitutional amendment and to ask them if they're defending marriage in their own lives. And then comes his message. Message. Specifically, we'd like you to ask them to vow that in the past, now, and in the future, they will abstain from sodomy, including same-sex and/or male-female analingus, cunnilingus, and fellatio, masturbation, adultery, prostitution, out-of-wedlock sex, hear that, Newt Gingrich?
Mm-hmm.
And marriages that cannot procreate. We also ask them about divorce, as there is no greater threat to marriage today than divorce. And in addition, the Bible makes clear that divorce is a no-no.
And the Bible also says that even if you look at another woman with lust, you're committing adultery. So,
uh-oh,
I mean, how many people are going to pass that test?
Well, does that count if you're looking at a man with lust?
Even Jimmy Carter said he had lust in his heart at times for people other than his wife.
But he was a Democrat.
Yeah, but he was saying, you know, he's a very religious person, and he was saying, I'm not free of, you know, things that are human.
Right.
Not that he would act on that, but there are times when,
I probably looked at a woman with lust Saturday night and again on Sunday morning and again Sunday
and
night and again Monday morning.
And what woman was that?
Anybody we know?
I can't say her name, but...
Why not?
Okay, it's Darlene.
But,
you know, I have to tell you...
I thought maybe there was a story behind it that you were going to go into with that, but now you've just left us hanging.
Well, you know...
Would I look on her with lust?
If you saw her, Deb, you probably would.
I see. Okay, we'll talk later, David.
But you know what they say? What happens inside the Beltway stays with inside the Beltway.
Oh, yeah. So not.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, Here in Texas, it's very important to contact our senators, which both happen to be Republican, Senator John Cornyn and Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison, and call President Bush. You can reach the senators by calling area code 202-224-3121, and you can reach the White House comment line at 202-395-0805. And several of the national organizations' websites have ways to contact your representatives. If you go to hrc.org, they can give you information. You can just with a few clicks send a message by email to your senators, and they make it very easy. And they offer an example letter, but you can edit that letter and either change it completely or use part of it. I'm understanding that a lot of the talking points that the Democrats and any pro anti-discrimination person are using are the same as the rest of us. Bush said in his own speech that we should be defending families and that protecting marriage. And somehow by defining marriage as only between a man and a woman protects it. It seems like that he wants to redefine what family is. And no matter what the law says, I mean, I don't know what their ultimate goal seems.
Their ultimate goal is they want people who are gay or lesbian or transgender to be invisible.
Right.
They don't.
Well, you know, the fact of this is this: a vote for this amendment is a vote for bigotry, pure and simple.
Amen.
It's politics, it's pandering, and it's placating to a core constituency, the religious right political movement.
That's right. Well, David, the time goes by so fast. Thank you for updating us. We'll have you again the first Monday of July, and I know you'll have a lot of good information for us then. Thanks for being on Queer Voices.
Thank you, David.
Good night, y'all.
Thank you.
Just something in the lighting, and you feel like it's like you're giving. Don't you?
upcoming Houston Pride Festival artist Taylor Dane, and her selection, I'll Be Your Shelter, from her 1989 CD, Can't Fight Fate. This is Queer Voices.
No, no, you can't fight fate. And your fate has been that even though you wanted to go to the premiere concert of Taking Center Stage, the Bayou City Women's Chorus, you cannot go because
we're sold out.
Linda Inger is here from the Bayou City Women's Chorus, and I mean, how did that happen? They're already sold out.
Yeah, well, I think what happened was we were invited to join the men at their concerts, both in December and in March. We did a very small segment.
Right.
And we did about 4 or 5 songs in each piece, and word got out. And by the time we had a date on the calendar for our own concert, we were sold out fairly quickly. Well, so we have another date for everybody on the 20th.
Oh, all right then. So fate has again turned its will, and you have a chance to enjoy the Bayou City Women's Chorus on June 20th. Is that a Wednesday?
That's a Tuesday night.
A Tuesday. Because so that's the night I get to go. The Women's Chorus started, what, about a year ago?
Yeah, they started having meetings in January of 2005, uh-huh. And it grew from 5 women that were interested in getting something like this started to 50 voices, that 50 women that are interested in singing. We're going to actually perform next weekend with 40 of those voices.
Wow.
So we're very excited, and we sound really good.
Even if you do say so yourself.
Absolutely.
And you do.
That's right.
And so where is the concert again?
The concert is at Baring Memorial United Methodist Church on Herald in Montrose, 1440 Herald, and we'll be performing in the sanctuary there at Baring Memorial.
And for those people that don't have tickets yet for the 20th, uh-huh. How do they go about getting tickets?
There are 2 ways that they can get tickets.
And just please don't say the price.
Okay. they can go online to BayouCityPerformingArts.org, or they can sing. They can sing? They can sing,
yeah. Just sing
they can
that
actually
number.
Sing to us at this phone number, 713-521-7464. That's 713-521-7464, and they can order tickets that way as well.
And actually, they can sing to you, because one of the things that you want is more members.
That's right. My purpose here tonight is not only to talk about our concert next weekend and on Tuesday, but also to encourage any of the women out there who like to sing, who've sung in choral groups before, to come and check us out.
Or maybe they haven't but wanted to.
Exactly. And we have a lot of women. I'm glad you mentioned that, because we have a lot of women in our chorus who have never done this before and are learning how to sing as one voice with many, many women and perform on stage. And they have a great time.
Mm-hmm. And I know the title, Taking Center Stage, is because this is the premier performance, and so the women are really being showcased, unlike the parts they've done in the previous shows with the Gay Men's Chorus.
Mm-hmm.
But what are some of the things, what are the kinds of music that's going to be performed, and is there any kind of like special treat we should be looking for?
Well, I think the entire concert is a treat, and we've got a wide variety of music. We're doing a medley from a very popular movie, and I'm not going to mention the movie, but it's a medley.
There's a surprise to look for.
Nice, right. We've got some really, really great music, a song called The Music in My Mother's House, which is will speak to just about everybody in the audience. Some really, really great stuff, and some soloists, and it's just going to be a great, great concert.
Who are some of the soloists?
We have about 4 or 5 of them, and there's so many I can't name them all, but Amanda is one, Amanda Prazak, Jan, I'm having trouble remembering all those names, uh-huh. But we've got a number of women who are going to have small solos throughout the concert.
Now, have you been involved since the beginning?
Yes, I have. I'm part of the founding membership.
All right,
group.
A founding member.
I'm not one of that first 5, but I started coming to some of the meetings shortly thereafter, and I've had the opportunity to sing both in December and in March.
And had you been involved in choral groups before?
Since I was in third grade. I've sung in many, many church choirs and choral groups and school and so on. And it, as I look back at that experience and I look at this experience, I think what is added on this experience is that it is an entire, it's a women's group. James Knapp is our director, and he's fabulous. But this women's group, it not only sings together, but they're also a real covenant group. We're very supportive of one another. We've had many of us who've had health issues or family issues, and they gather around and really support one another very strongly.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what kind of drew you to be involved, and then also what are some of the things that you're getting out of the experience?
Well, what drew me to be involved is I love to sing, and I love harmony. And what drew me to this particular experience was to sing with all women, to do a variety of music. I've sung in many, many church groups, and I've enjoyed that. But this opportunity is more secular in the music, although we do some sacred music, especially in the holiday season. And I don't have to get up every Sunday morning and go to church. So that's kind of cool.
You know, I know several people that go to church so that they can sing in the choir.
Exactly.
They're not really there for the church.
Right, right. And I know a few people like that, too. My neighbor, I talked her into coming to sing with us. And one of the things that she likes about it is that she can sing with this really talented group of women for a very, very talented director. And she doesn't have to be a member of a church or have to go to church every Sunday morning. So, you know, if you're not a churchgoer but you like singing in choral music, you really need to check this this course out.
Is there any music that is particularly gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender identifiable? Something maybe from one of the pioneers in women's music, or
In this concert?
Yes,
yes. We have, and we have a wide variety of music, both directed strictly to women, and also kind of a general format. We are a very inclusive group. We are a women's group. We're not a lesbian group. We have many, many straight women, including my neighbor, who I talked into singing with us. Hi, Stephanie, if you're listening.
Hi, Stephanie.
And so we are very inclusive, and we try and speak to all of the different groups that will be listening to us.
But it certainly is a group that is composed of many lesbians and those that are lesbian-friendly.
Absolutely.
If someone's homophobic, they're probably not going to feel comfortable singing with this group.
Yes, I would say that that's an absolute. Yeah, I would say the majority of the women in the chorus are lesbian, but we have many, many
And that's
women
okay.
As well. Absolutely,
we
love them.
Support them in that as long as they can sing.
As long as they can sing,
that's all. And I know you also encourage people who don't sing to be able to help out with some of the things that need doing in concerts to make them happen.
And there are many, many opportunities to get involved if you don't sing or you don't like to perform. There are many opportunities to get involved behind the scenes, both in terms of selling tickets, moving equipment. We're going to need to move a lot of equipment into the church.
Okay, we need some of you butch women.
People with trucks. People with trucks. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunities to help support the chorus in a non-singing capacity.
Yeah. And that's why I have you on the radio show, so I can support you in a non-singing capacity.
Yes, and I appreciate that.
I would sell my soul if I could sing, but I can't. Or rather, I can sing, but very, very badly. Okay, and so again, the premier concert is the 17th on Saturday at 8 p.m. at Baring, and that is sold out. Mm-hmm. But you still have an opportunity to get tickets for the show for June 20th, which will be Tuesday night, also at 8 p.m.
Yes.
Now, do you have child care?
No, we do not.
Is there any special provisions for if children attend? Do they have to pay full price ticket?
Yeah, I don't think we have a difference in ticket price. The tickets are very, very reasonable.
Yes, they are. Yeah, they are. Well, you know, back in the day, we always had this, you know, you had to have child care thing. It was very feminist and all that. And not that this isn't. And so, again, if people want to get involved in the chorus, get tickets, volunteer,
They can do it one of two ways. They can go to the BioCityPerformingArts.org website, and they'll find all kinds of ways to get involved. Or they can call us at 713-521-7464.
Well, thank you, Linda Inger from the Bayou City Women's Chorus, for being with us on Queer Voices. This is Deborah Bell, and stay tuned with us. Greg Chapman and Jennifer Renee will be talking with Ellen Cohen about her state representative race.
There is another one of the artists from the 06 Houston Pride Festival coming up. That was Casey Stratton, and the song was called Coercion. This is Queer Voices.
And good evening. Yeah, this is Jennifer Renee. We have with us Ellen Cohen, who is campaigning for State Representative District 134 and has already been endorsed by the Houston GLBT Political Caucus. Ellen, well, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thank you for asking me here tonight.
Where the District 134? Give me some boundaries of that. So.
Okay, great. Well, it includes all of the following, all of River Oaks, all of West University, and all of Bel Air. And it includes parts of Montrose, parts of Meyerland, Rice Military, through Memorial, and inside the loop. It doesn't go outside 610.
Okay, I followed that exactly.
Okay, well.
Be sure to look on your voter identification and see if it says 134.
Oh, and also, and you can go into our website, and we have a map that you can access.
What's that? What's your website?
EllenCohen.org.
All right. And if they want to call you?
832-5... Wait a minute. No, I'm just about ready to give my cell phone number out. That wasn't good.
Don't do that. You might get a few
713-660-0899.
All right, thank you. Well, for those of out there in the audience that don't know, well, who you are, and I'll tell us something about yourself.
Okay.
Family
well,
and all.
Well, I'll give you a little background. Sort of starting from the most recent, I am the president and CEO of the Houston Area Women's Center, but I'm on a leave of absence to run for the seat. And all being well, I will be returning in November as the president and CEO of the Houston Area Women's Center and state representative from District 134. I was also, before I joined the Houston Area Women's Center, where I've been for 15 years, I was the executive director of the American Jewish Committee for 10 years in Houston, which is a human rights organization, and moved here with my family, my late husband and two children, in 1977 from his hometown of Montreal. I got there by way of Cleveland, Ohio, which is where I was born and raised.
That was going to be my next question. Now, where did you start?
Yeah, Cleveland,
Ohio.
Started, yeah.
Okay.
Cleveland, Ohio, yeah.
What is the Women's Center? What do you do with the Women's Center?
The Houston Area Women's Center is one of the largest women's centers in the country. We deal with survivors of domestic and sexual violence, women, children, and men. And we have a shelter, which is the largest shelter of its kind in the country for survivors. And then our counseling building is on, and the shelter is in an undisclosed location, so the counseling building's on Waugh and West Dallas. And we have a staff of 120 and a budget of about $5.5 million.
Impressive, yes. Well,
so, I mean,
y'all do got a little good work.
Really do. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
And the political caucus endorsed you, and tell me why.
You're the president of it. You tell me why. I was thrilled when I got the endorsement. Yeah, I wasn't sitting in the room, remember. You were.
So. Well, yes, I know that.
I had what I hoped was an honest exchange of discussion and dialogue when I went before you. And I think and I hope that the caucus saw me as someone who is sincere in my beliefs and supportive of the issues of the GLBT. And someone who, you know, clearly wouldn't be recorded, you know, in a vote as present not voting. I mean, I will be present and voting for the issues that I believe are important to the community.
Well, for those of you who might not have known, that was what Martha Wong did when it came to Amendment 2. When elected.
Thank you.
what issues in the state legislature do you think needs to be addressed right away?
Important
to you?
Yeah, I think important to this to the district, really, because you know, again, it's not me. I mean, you know, if I'm going to be up there, I'm going to be representing District 134. So, I mean, the issues that surface from 134 are health care, affordable, quality health care, which I support strongly. I'm a 37-year breast cancer survivor. My husband had his life extended here at the medical center by 18 quality years because of the skills of the physicians and the fact that we had good health insurance. Even then, it cut into our ability to plan for our future just by what we had to put in. So quality and affordable health care is what the district cares about. The district cares about education. We have some terrific elementary, middle, and high schools in the district, and we want to keep them that way, and the only way we're going to do that is to keep the quality teachers that have a passion for teaching and make sure that they're paid a very healthy salary. Right now, you know, the legislature was forced to do what it did and basically gave them a $2,000 increase, which is really a $1,500 one because they had lost $500.
I was going to say that you do the math on that, it's really not that much money, even despite the political advertisements.
Well, and that's exactly right. Plus, it still keeps teachers at $4,000 below the national average. I mean, this is Texas, and teachers are below the national average at $4,000. So education is important. The environment's important. Two facets to that people care about in this district. I mean, you and I were just talking about exercising before we came on the air. So you want to, you know, you want the air at least so that you can be out there running or
so
walking.
So you can breathe it as you walk.
You can breathe it, yeah, so you don't feel it. You can breathe it. And what that also says is that if we continue to have poor quality air, so that you have, you know, the front page of the Chronicle says we're the third most polluted air, you've got companies that aren't going to come here because they're not going to relocate here if they think that the quality of life is not what they want for their employees. I mean, Toyota considered that and moved to San Antonio as one of the issues.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that seems to be overlooked in all of the conversations that the legislature has about the quality of life in any given area.
Right.
You know, they want to promote business. You know, right. this whole thing, of course, they did put a tax on business.
Well, they did. Well, as they should, actually. Mm. We need, you know, we've got to get it somewhere. And I guess the fourth issue and the one that I also feel very strongly about are personal life decisions. And we talked a lot about this during the interview. And that is so that people can make decisions about when life begins and when it ends, so that the government isn't in our bedrooms mm-hmm. and in our hospital rooms. And I think I said to you that, you know, when my husband and I knew that his life was coming to an end, it was our decision as to how we were going to handle that between us, with our family, with our God, mm-hmm. however we were going to handle it, and not some bureaucrat sitting in front of a computer diagnosing him from wherever. You know,
that would seem like to be a really conservative position. I mean, the idea that it's handled within the family, it's handled without, you know, government looking over your shoulder.
You would think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it would seem like an intrinsically conservative position.
Yes, well, it doesn't seem to work that way, does it?
No.
I mean, because nothing could be more invasive than the way people are behaving in terms of what you can do inside your bedroom and what you can do with decisions in your hospital room.
Yeah, and that means not just heterosexual families or relationships. It means same sex.
Of course. Of course. Absolutely. I mean, what's more invasive than being inside, having the government tell you what you can do inside your home? I mean, you know, the conservative position, as you so correctly stated, is, you know, less government is better, except when it comes to your own personal life decisions.
And, if you're doing anything that I disagree with.
Yeah, that's right.
That's basically
right.
The way they put it.
That's right. That's right.
You were talking about local issues.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned four. Are there any others that we might need to talk about?
I think that those are the four, and the district, those are the four basic issues that the legislature gets involved in. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are other issues, but they're issues that city council should be handling or the Fed should be handling. I think we've got a lot on our plate. I think that, you know, the legislature made decisions because they were forced to. The government said the courts are going to make this decision if you don't make it by May 15th. That's not leadership. And so they have a lot on their plate. I mean, and before we know it, they're going to be meeting again, and hopefully I'll be meeting with them.
All right. As far as going back to, again, the marriage amendment,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I know in the conversations I've had with you, your feelings on that. Why don't you express that to our audience who may not know?
Well, interestingly enough, that I'm sure your audience knows that Prop 2, the people of this district voted against Prop 2, which was really a very unique situation. Since
one of the few districts that did.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And so clearly I have the same attitude they have, I mean, in terms of that response. My personal feelings are that I believe people are on this earth, and in my case, I believe people are on this earth for one big go-around. Now, I know other people believe we may have been here before and we may be coming back. And maybe we will. I don't know. I have no... But right now,
well, if
I say,
we come back, we'll do it better
next
right. time.
That's right. Exactly. Let's hope so. The fact is that if we are here one time, you have one shot at being with someone that you care about, spending your life with someone you want to be with, raising children, providing a healthy, supportive lifestyle for the people that you care about. Mm-hmm. And the government should not be legislating who you should be able to do that with.
Well, yeah, legislating who you can love.
That's right. That's
and
right.
It goes back to, you know, I love that, what is it? It's not about family values. It's about the value of our families.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's right.
Know, that's so important for us to remember that, you know, no matter what they preach out there, no matter what they cloak themselves in, you know, they're not out for the best interest of all people.
No, of course not. And I mean, when you quoted that, I was thinking the other one that I had heard recently, that when you are elected to office, you put your hand on the Bible and you swear to uphold the Constitution. You don't put your hand on the Constitution and swear to uphold the Bible.
Ooh, I didn't
hear like that
one. I like that one.
I did too.
May I steal it?
Yeah, of course. Why not? I'm
good.
Sure I did.
Yeah, yeah.
So there.
Yeah. Well, we won't tell anybody.
But I don't remember from whom, so it was okay.
Well, that didn't matter then if you don't remember. And again, going back to your vision for Texas. You're elected in November and you're up there. Well, what do you want to see Texas do?
Well, one of the things I really would like to see Texas do is I'd like to see the legislators be able to sit down and show respect for one another. I mean, it is at a point now where if you don't think the way I think, then you're bad and you're evil. And the fact is that people aren't necessarily evil. They just have a different point of view. And if we are going to try to do what's best for our kids, if we're going to try to provide health care, if we're really going to do the kinds of things we need to do, then we need to sit down with people and come to consensus. We're not going to do it the way things are right now. And I do believe, I mean, I'll give you a perfect example of how that works. When Scott Hochberg had a proposal up there this year about how we were going to handle the issues around education and taxation and what we were going to do, 14 Republicans moved over and voted with him. Of those 14, two are not running again. And of those 12, they're all targeted by the far right because they saw what was good and right in Scott's proposal and moved over. Now they're being targeted by the far right. So my vision for Texas is first to sit down in a collegial way. We know it's happened before. We know people can do it. You can have your views, and no. I can have my views. But if we sit there and say that gay partners can't adopt, and we sit there and we look at all these children who would so desperately need to be loved, how do you make a decision for children that they shouldn't be in a home where they could receive love? And how can you not put the children first?
You know, dogma is destructive.
It is.
Almost in any form, because it doesn't really care about who's being helped, who's being hurt.
That's right.
It looks at this predetermined result, regardless of the situation.
That's right.
And ideological
there,
people are, you know, they're dogmatic.
Well.
And they can't get outside that box.
Yeah.
So you're going to get those kind of results.
Well, you always are. I mean, you're going to get people on the far right who aren't going to move, and you get people on the far left who aren't going to move. But
right. But
there are people with whom you can sit down who just, you know, in their hearts they feel one way, but they've been raised to believe another way.
Oh, yes.
And, you know,
I was reared in a home like that.
Were you?
You know, I had to overcome it.
Okay.
You know, when I looked in the mirror, I had to overcome it. I was wondering, you know, we talk about this and we talk about the fairness. It's just civility.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in a time when, you know, the legislature actually went up there and did things the bipartisan way.
That's exactly right.
You know, they talked about issues and about what was best for the people of the state of Texas, and we became a great state because of it, and it seems like the current legislature sort of undermining it over the last few years. Anyway.
I would go so far as to say that, I would say you're absolutely right, and it doesn't even seem like it. I mean, I think they are undermining it. I think there is a clear agenda by some people that to do away with public education,
Oh, yes.
And to head into program. I mean, how is that benefiting our children? I mean, the fact of the matter is, if we don't have quality public education, we're not going to have quality people to hire. We're going to have health care. I read a very interesting study that talks about people without a high school education and what great effect they have on you as an employer in hiring them, because they have more heart disease, they have more problems with blood pressure, other things, mm-hmm. because of a lack of education. Their eating habits are not, you know, they're not eating the correct things. So education is so important, and if we, you know, if we lose sight of that.
No, absolutely.
There almost seems to be a deliberate attempt to just let the schools crumble.
Yes, well, there is. I mean, I think there's an agenda for a strong parochial system, and then maybe we will have to put our hands on the Constitution and swear to uphold the Bible.
Well, that whole voucher system business, you know, is good as they always try to point it out, it can be in certain instances. However, it's rare instances. It's not all of it. I was educated in the public school system. I thought I did pretty good. I made it into college and all those things. So it was a good system It still could be.
Yeah. No, I went through public school education in Cleveland as well, and my kids went to Bel Air High School here. So I mean, we have very good public schools, but if we don't invest in them, and by that the infrastructure and mostly the teachers, I mean, if we don't invest in our teachers, where our children spend all of their time with the quality teachers, then we are going to we're going to lose an entire generation.
Well, like everything, time's running past.
Sorry.
And, let me hear your website again and your telephone number, if you can remember it.
Okay, the website is www.ellencohn.org.
Mm-hmm.
And the telephone number is 713-660-0899. And I'd love for people to go on the website. We really welcome their participation.
All right.
And thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. We've had Ellen Cohn, candidate for State Representative, District 134. Thank you.
Goodbye, George. You gotta thank go. You. Me or my home. You're the scourge of all the folks on the bio. Please don't think you can't tell one more lie. Son of a gun, what have you done to the bio? Jambalaya sitting by, comes your twiddle. Louisiana floating by while you fiddle. Cheney's friends meet bad ends, me oh my oh. He's got a gun and everybody running on the bio. Son of a gun, I need someone on the bio.
And I would like to thank Pokey Anderson for providing that to us. That was Ann Reed and a song called Goodbye, George. And a nice segue to the interview that we had before that. And I should mention also that coming up this Sunday at Fitzgerald's, which is located at White Oak and Shepherd, the Women Folk in Sea Festival is going on. And this is a KPFT benefit, and it's also raising awareness of hepatitis C. There's going to be hepatitis C screening tokens available. Artists confirmed so far: Janet Z, April Kelly, T.C. Smythe, and Susan Gibson. And again, that's the Women Folk in Sea, a KPFT benefit, coming up this Sunday afternoon at Fitzgerald's, starting at 3 at White Oak and Studewood. And if you're driving in the car and saying, I can't remember all that, don't worry, because if you go to the KPFT website at kpft.org, there is a link right there on the front page. And it's you, yes.
It's us. It's back
to us. It is you. It is back to you.
Well,
and, oh, by the way, you're listening to Queer Voices.
That's right.
Oh, good. Yes, I'm Jennifer Renee.
And did we do the station ID, or is it not quite 9 yet?
Not quite 9 yet.
We got 3 minutes left.
3 minutes?
Yeah.
Tell you what, though, I'll go ahead and do it right now, and then we'll get it out of the way. How's that?
Okay, that's fine with me.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston.
Hey, that was good.
I liked that. Yeah, you've got such a wonderful voice.
Oh,
and
you.
Remember that you can listen to KPFT on the web at www.kpft.org. And the shows are archived for 60 days. So if you miss Monday night, you can tune in on the web. You can even download and save the show.
Yeah, and save those good interviews that we do. See?
Yeah, because we're so good. We are so good.
You can do the streaming thing.
That's right. We're all tens on the radio, just remember.
Some of us are more tens than other.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, Greg, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
You're doing good. And your partner did a show this weekend at Ovations.
That's right.
Tony Pryor. And who was that wonderful singer that was with him?
Glennie Scott.
I hadn't heard her. She had a great voice.
Yes. In fact, he's done some vocal coaching with her, and so they've worked with each other for a while, and they accompanied each other on the show, and yeah, it was great.
We should have him on to do that little Brokeback Cowboy song.
Oh yeah,
I wonder if
does he have it recorded? We'd love to play
I wonder if JD has that in his collection.
I don't know. We'll have to see about that.
We have Ellie here tonight helping us out in the control room. She's waving. You can all see
that. Can y'all see her wave?
And Jack is busy trying to get the final details of Pride.
Right.
He's in a meeting. And then JD is at the Out Music Awards.
That's right.
I don't know if he's actually at them right now, but he'll be at them, and he'll be reporting back after attending. He's one of the judges for that.
Yes, he is.
And so a lot of stuff going
on. Excellent opportunity.
We really appreciate you being with us here on Queer Voices. Remember, if you pledge during our pledge drive, make sure that you pay your pledge, because it really doesn't count. And you can always pledge online anytime or call the station during office hours.
Yes, donate lots of money.
Yeah, lots of money.
Hey, you know, we had this interesting little conversation off to the side about how do you meet gay people? Where do you go to meet them? How do I meet somebody that's compatible with me? And then somebody called in and asked that very same question.
Oh, how
ironic. Yes, let's go ahead. And while we're waiting for Joan's plane to land.
Oh, is that what we're waiting
for? That's what we're waiting on.
We're waiting for Joan Devlin's plane to land so that she can do her interview. Good timing.
Our advice, of course, is always do the things that you like to do. If you like to play softball, go join a gay softball league, and you know, those exist. If you like to bowl, do bowling. If you like to play bingo, if you like to get involved in community service, theater, whatever, you're sure to meet people who have the same interests as you, and it's much better meeting somebody under those circumstances than meeting them under an alcohol-induced haze.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Or drug-induced
haze. That's right. Mm-hmm. You can always wake up with a coyote.
All right, now, let's not go there.
Oh, sorry.
There's a website.
There is a website, pridehouston.org, and one of the great ways to get involved in community and find out about what's going on is through Pride Houston. Not only doing the parade, but all the things that lead up, the events that go on, the festival. At the festival, there will be 85 exhibitors, vendors, and 45 of those are community organizations.
That's right.
So if maybe you want to find out a little bit more about Team Houston, which is going to go to the gay games, or the one of the singing groups, the volleyball, golf, the whole list of things. There's people that play cards. There's a group of people that like to restore and rebuild classic cars. They've been around a while. There's Executive Professional of Houston and the Chamber of Commerce. So
lots of things to get involved in. And
also, you can get involved here.
Oh, yes. And at the festival, there are lots of tables out there with different service organizations that you can go out and join. If you want to get involved in the community, more than just sitting around and maybe not going and voting, that's where you can go.
Right.
Go there and get involved in some organization, a service organization inside of our community. There's plenty of opportunities. And if you want to meet someone, that is the best environment to meet someone.
And it's meeting someone, not necessarily just for a romantic interest, but for friendship. I go to the women's group at the First Unitarian Church, which is not a church group. It's a feminist group. It's been around for 30 years. Woman-only space for 30 years. And this last Sunday, we had women from the Hare Krishnas come and show us how to drape saris. And if you make a donation, they let you keep the sari, and then the money goes to the Food for Kids program through Interfaith Ministries.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So this is their way of expressing their ministry and their beliefs, and plus, it was all these beautiful women there sharing culture and then having these exquisite saris on. Next Sunday.
Is this a lead for me? Is that why you're looking at me that way?
What, beautiful women? No. On Sunday, June 11th, Martina Cartwright, who is an attorney, is going to be talking about a lesbian couple's journey to motherhood and how these two women went through artificial insemination, and they have created a son who is going to is due this month. And then so there's legal things, and you know, so we're going to talk about that whole process. And then the following Sunday is Lori Adams, who is an expert on Social Security and financial planning, and so she's going to be. So you can see it's a very diverse what the topics may be. We're going to have in July women in law enforcement. So it's a group for all women where every woman expresses her own feminism. It meets at 10:45 every Sunday morning at the First Unitarian Church, 5200 Fannin at Southmore. And if you'd like more information about that, you can just email me and I'll send it out to you.
You just want to get some emails. That's
all. Oh, like
too.
I need more. Yeah. You know, I have like 1,400 unopened emails. Anyway, so that's thedivadeb@yahoo.com. And you can also reach me there to find out more about the Feminist Online Network, which is one of the best ways for women to find out what's going on in the community. So to go out to things and meet people. And well, that's, again, thedivadeb@yahoo.com.
That's right. Yes. Well, before you go Sunday morning for that, on Saturday night, the Houston Transgendered Unity Committee is hosting a pride party at Meteors. It starts at 9 to 2. It's free to the community. Just come on out. This is the first time the transgendered community has sponsored a party during Pride Festival.
It's so exciting.
It's something new. So we've been in the parade for a number of years, but now this is the time to really start getting more involved in the activities during Pride Month.
From 9 p.m. to closing at Meteor,
yes.
Which is over on Genesee, right at where Fairview turns into 2M.
That's correct. You are so good. You were so careful. Everybody knows where that is down, don't you?
Yeah, apparently. You just say that, they know.
Come join us, please.
I went to the Lesbians in Progress event, which was held at Blur on Saturday night. And
were you a blur by the end of the evening?
I was kind of blurred.
You did give me a call.
I did. I just needed to talk to somebody. But
we won't go into that.
The neat thing about it was that there was a group of people that I had met at the Transgender Unity Banquet.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah,
yes.
And it was a packed house.
Did you say everybody hello for me?
I did.
Oh, good. Thank you.
And some of them knew you.
Oh.
But it was a very diverse group, and we had a good time. So is
Are
Joan,
we ready for Joan now?
Has Joan landed?
Okay, yes, she
Joan
has.
Joan is in the
Joan
house. Go Joan.
House.
And if you have just joined us, I should let you know that you are listening to Queer Voices, and we are heard here every Monday night starting at 8 p.m. and running until 10 p.m. Now, Joan has just stepped off the airplane and has her guest, Ben Omart. Joan.
Yes, hi. I am in sunny, well, not so sunny, Norfolk, Virginia, and I'm talking to Ben Omart, who is the author of the upcoming Joan Davis biography, Hold That Joan, coming out in September of 2006. And Ben, thank you so much for being on with us tonight, because this is a book whose time is, well, kind of overdue. Joan Davis was hugely famous in the 40s and 50s, and then that was it. She died relatively young, and it seems like nobody's really bothered to put together all of her contributions to radio and film and vaudeville and TV until now. So how daunting was it, and what made you decide to do it?
Well, actually, you're right. I think Joan is always going to be overshadowed by I Love Lucy and Lucille Ball, because in the 50s they were sort of competing for the same audience, and everyone's today even seems to like both shows equally as well. Joan was very, very difficult to write about because there are no living witnesses. I only found one person in my what I consider exhaustive search for some witnesses to her life. There are no family members left because, as some of you might know, in 1961 there was a fire that claimed Beverly Wills, who was Joan's daughter, and her two sons and grandmother. So there were four people that perished in that fire, along, unfortunately, with almost everything personal that had to do with Joan Davis, her scrapbooks, her photos. It's just a real tragedy, not just for human life, but for research purposes. So the only person I could find was the first husband, ex-husband of Joan's daughter. And he was living in Arizona a few years ago, so I got a fair amount of information from him. But as far as the early life, I sort of had to reconstruct it all from interviews and magazine articles. It was difficult.
Well, what did you find out? For those who maybe are not familiar with Joan Davis, Joan Davis's movie career, much like that of Eve Arden, she was witty, smart, sarcastic, very much a tomboy persona, very athletic, and she hit the pinnacle of her fame was on radio, because her radio was the top running radio program for many, many years. That appeared she was on after Bing Crosby on Sunday nights.
The radio series made her a star. She actually had a big following. She had a long supporting career with 20th Century Fox. But the trouble is, when you look at many of those 30s movies, she had what I call a cameo career. A lot of films, she was only in it for a few minutes. Many times she was not significant to the plot, and she would only have a scene or two.
Come in and fall down.
Yes, but she was memorable. I mean, she actually got pretty high credit for appearing in just for a few minutes in a film. So she was making real headway as far as being memorable to audiences, and they wanted to see more of her. Unfortunately, she just wasn't getting the really solid roles. She was always second banana. She was the best friend who never got the guy. She was notorious, even in her radio career, for being a homely, gainly, very unattractive woman who was always man-hungry, which is almost the complete opposite of what she was in real life. She was She was a lady who had class. She had natural beauty, but for her screen image, she was always put into the spotlight of Second Banana, which was unfortunate. It would have been nice to have seen more of her in her heyday.
How much of that, though, was professional jealousy? Because I know in the Shirley Temple film just around the corner, she and Burt Lahr had a dancer team that was actually cut because Shirley Temple's mother felt like they were just too strong together. And I know that when she worked with Lou Costello and Bud Abbott on Hold That Ghost, he was very intimidated by her and actually was making noises about she was stealing the movie and who was the star of the movie anyway and on and on and on. And they never did make another film together.
Yeah, that was very unfortunate because that actually is her most famous film, I would say. And in fact, that's where the title of the book comes from, Hold That Joan, rather than Hold That Ghost. I don't know if it was really jealousy. One thing I found out through my research was that Joan wasn't really a nice person. She was very nice on screen, you know, helpful and almost a pushover as far as relationships go and wanting to help friends and everything. But when you look at the reality, she was almost the complete opposite. She was a very hard, business-like woman who was egotistical. And that's not necessarily a bad thing because when you are a star, you have to push yourself into the limelight if you want more work. So I think perhaps, and I seem to recall Lou Costello had a bit of an ego too, because he was the star of the team, really. So that may have been more to do with why they didn't work again, even though they worked so well in Hold That Ghost.
Yeah, well, let's get into this, because Jim Backus was not very kind in his biography. And
yes.
How much of that has to do with her being a female? You know, you hear the same thing since we go the Lucy route. You tend to hear this about Lucille Ball, too. They both ran their own production companies. Actually, Joan Davis was the first one to do it because she was making her own movies, Traveling Saleswoman and Harem Girl, among others, with her JD Productions. But how much of that has to do with her being a female? Because a lot of times the very traits that people admire in males, when women espouse those same traits,
yeah,
they get accused
true.
Of a lot of different, you know, very different reaction.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the sociology aspect of that. I do know that she, as I say, she was a hard businesswoman, and it may have been. I don't want to generalize her as the common woman because she was very she could ruffle feathers. She could treat people not too nicely. And as you read in Jim Backus's book, he almost had nothing good to say about her.
He was mad because he wanted to be the queen of comedy.
Pardon?
He was mad because he wanted to be billed as America's queen of comedy.
Well, yeah, he did complain that he got, I think, a with credit. It was Joan Davis in I Married Joan with Jim Backus.
He was making three times what anybody on All of Lucy's show was making, too, which he didn't quite bring up in his book. But anyway.
But I think, I do believe that, especially in the 50s, it was very difficult being a woman in charge, and she really was in charge. I mean, she, even though she wasn't credited with the scripts, she had, a hand in every aspect of the show. In fact, there were times, when she was working on I Married Joan that she didn't even go home. She would just sleep in the, in the office there because she was putting in, you know, 14 or 16 hour days. During rehearsals, because she had to have say on the set, the scripts, just really everything about the show, and that put an enormous pressure on her. And I think that's probably the real reason she didn't continue. After a few years, she just quit because it was just far too nerve-wracking.
Right? Could it have contributed to, because she died very, very young of a heart attack?
Yeah,
and there are people who said that some of the health problems began with all the hours, and plus the very physical nature of what she was doing with the TV show as well.
Yeah, I think she may have been one of those people who She was actually retired for 2 years before she died of a heart attack. And I think perhaps some people aren't meant to retire. When they have all this relaxation time, it just suddenly hits them. And that may have been it, because she really didn't do much for the last couple of years of her life. But that also may have been because of a heart condition. I mean, we really will never know completely, since there aren't anyone, there's just no one to ask anymore.
Right. Well, Ben, how can people get your book? Let's get to that, because we're winding down here. What do people need to do to get the book? It's in pre-order right now, correct?
Yes, the easiest way is just to go to bearmannermedia.com, and you can order it there. There's a Joan Davis page on that page. It will be available from Amazon and probably oldies.com, but that will be in the fall. Right now, if you want free shipping, you can go to the bearmannermedia.com website.
And tell our guests, our listeners, actually a little bit about Bear Manor Media, because you are very, very unique in the publishing world.
Well, I started out as a writer, writing radio books, one on the Great Gildersleeve, and I collaborated with a Paulette Goddard biography that I need to get back into print, because it's out of print now. But I found that I actually preferred the publishing part to the writing part, even though I keep writing books. I'm trying to stop, actually. It's a hard habit to break, I think. But right now I'm writing a Mel Blanc book, and I hope that's going to be my last, but it's very difficult. So I just started to publish. Some people came to me with ideas for books, and I just said, yes, that would be fun. And most of them are radio books, and then I started getting into what I consider are the unsung heroes, the supporting player. Joan Davis classifies as that, of course. And then I started doing TV books like Alias Smith and Jones and biographies of Agnes Moorehead. And actually, the TV books sell much better than the radio books, but I keep doing the radio ones, because radio to me is great, because it's all in your head. You can figure out what's going on better. The sets are better. The people are lovely. Everything's better in radio, because it's all in your own head.
I agree. We agree. Everything's better in radio.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. We've been talking to Ben Omar, author of the upcoming Joan Davis biography, Hold That Joan, available from Bear Manor Media in September of 2006. And you can pre-order it at www.bearmannermedia.com. Is that correct?
Yep, that's it.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Ben. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Thank you.
I'd be content to watch TV. I couldn't care if the roof fell on me. On any other day, I'd forget to pay my bills. On any other day, I couldn't give a damn about the world and all its ills. Things you do on a day like today. My heart is feeling so brand new. I'm a believer. Thank God I found you. We do it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, rest on Sunday. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, rest on Sunday. So blue on a day like today, I'm healed by the things you do. On a day like today, my heart is feeling so brand new. I'm a believer. I've touched you and I know it's true. A believer, sexual
that is Blue House, who will be performing at Mucky Duck June 13th. And they're going to be here in the studio live next week on Queer Voices.
And now we're waiting for Joan again, because I guess her plane, she's deplaning still after that interview.
Deplane.
Yeah. That was a really interesting interview, and some of us do remember Joan Davis.
I do remember Joan Davis. Yes, I married Joan. I remember I must have been the black and white TV. It was the babysitter for our family. As soon as we got one, the kids were just set in front of it. Quintessential TV children.
And Joan's supposed to join us again to talk with a very timely subject of the gay marriage, for better or for worse, what we've learned from the evidence with the authors of that book. But first, we're going to announce about this week.
Oh, yeah. I want to announce that the Houston GLBT Political Caucus will meet Wednesday night. That's this Wednesday, the 7th, at 7 p.m. at 3400 Montrose, Suite 207. If you haven't made it to the caucus, if you're a member, obviously, and you haven't been in a while, please come. Hubert Bowe is going to be there. He is a state representative from District 143, who also was one of the few people who voted no to Amendment 2 in the legislature. He stood his ground, honorable fellow that he is.
And we need to, he's running again, and he's received the PAC's endorsement from...
No, not yet. He hasn't screened yet, but he is scheduled to screen with us later on in June.
And important thing to remember about the Houston Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender Political Caucus is that you don't have to be a member to attend the meetings.
No.
You can come and visit and hear the speaker and kind of check it out.
Oh, yeah.
But between the caucus and Houston Equal Rights Alliance and the different campaigns that are going on, there's plenty of things.
Oh yeah, well, one of the
find
things,
out about and do.
Yeah, one of the things I like to point out about the caucus is that the one of the activities of the caucus is to screen the candidates. You know, they're invited to come in. They sit down in front of a panel. They have to answer a list of questions we've sent to them, and then we sit down and ask the hard questions. And if you're a member of the caucus, you can volunteer to sit in on those screening committees, and you get to ask those hard questions of the different candidates that you want to ask. Media never ask what we want it to ask. Ask them the ones that they don't want to answer and don't want to be asked. Then they're evaluated, put before the memberships, in which case, if you're a member, you can then vote and the endorsement.
That's right. You can be part of the screening panel.
Be part of the process.
That's right. Part of the solution. Well, in this month's Pride Month Outsmart magazine for June 2006, starting on page 38, is an article about the president of the caucus, and that's Jennifer Renee Poole.
Who is this?
That's Jennifer Renee Poole.
I know her.
And the title of the article is The Commander-in-Chief.
Yes,
and
so they canceled my favorite show.
Well, we need to write in. Go to now.org on the web and check out about how you can complain. Maybe they'll bring it in on Lifetime or one of the other
stations. And if you want to catch the article, if you haven't seen the magazine yet, it's on outsmartmagazine.com, and you'll see it. It's in the front page of it. You can just click my name.
Yeah,
and you get to learn a little bit about me. I'm a proud person.
Yeah, there's all kinds of really good stuff about Pride Month, and so it's a good guide to Pride. Now, do we have Joan with us?
We are sort of half ready.
Half ready.
Yeah, there's
half done.
There's a calm problem with New York. We can't get a trunk line to New York for one of the guests. However, Joan is here. Hello, Joan.
Hi.
And Joan, I think your other guest may be ready.
Okay, is it William or is it Darren?
Bill Eskridge in Washington. I'm right here.
Oh, hi, Bill. We almost talked this morning.
Yes, I know. I'm so sorry. I'd gotten the PM wrong.
Well, Bill, can you tell our audience, first of all, I'm unfortunately just got off a plane. I don't have all my pieces here. So
we're going to keep trying on that number. No, Joan, we're going to keep trying that New York number, but I'm not holding up much hope.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Back to you,
I'm talking
Joan.
To Bill Eskridge. And Bill, could you please tell our audience about your book? It's especially pertinent today, considering there's been a lot in the news about gay marriage and the marriage amendment.
That is correct. Our book is entitled Gay Marriage for Better or for Worse. And we have a whole website that explains it in more detail, www.gaymarriagebook.com. The book does three things. One is that it traces a history of the same-sex marriage debate in the United States, and in particular the evolution of the arguments against same-sex marriage, from simple definitional arguments to the main kinds of arguments that are raised today by the president in his address this morning and by the senators debating it today and tomorrow. And that is the defense of marriage argument. The argument, as it's phrased now, is that marriage is an institution in decline, that gay marriage will push that institution over the edge, possibly to its very demise, and that's an argument against same-sex marriage. It's not an argument against gay people. It's an argument to preserve the institution intact. Now, the last time the old federal marriage amendment was debated, the only evidence that the supporters gave for that was Scandinavia. They said, well, look, in Scandinavia they have same-sex marriage, and that has terminated marriage in Scandinavia. And I think that argument is going to be run in tomorrow's debate as well by Senator Brownback and perhaps others. So the second point of our book, which we think is very important, is this international evidence which was used the last time and probably will be used again this time by some, it bears examination. Did state recognition of same-sex unions, they're not marriages, they're called registered partnerships in Scandinavia, starting with Denmark in 1989, has this had deleterious effects on the institution of marriage? And what our book documents in great detail is that it's the sky did not fall on marriage. That in Denmark, for example, the marriage rate among Danes had been declining for about a generation before 1989 when they adopted the law. The divorce rate had been going up, and the rate of non-marital children had been going up very dramatically in Denmark. Excuse me? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
And from the Houston Pride Festival coming up this year in 06, that was Casey Stratton. She will be performing, and that was her song, In Silence. And since we're having so much fun with phone lines this evening, we're going to go now to Paul Stratton, because we can't seem to keep a constant connection with Joan, so go ahead.
That's Paul Scott, Executive Director of Equality Texas. Paul, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Hi, I'm Deborah Bell. And here,
Jennifer Renee.
And we haven't had a chance to meet yet, but welcome to Equality Texas, because I know you're fairly new in the job.
Yes, fairly new, about 3 months into it.
Yeah, and are they treating you right so far?
So far, yeah, love Austin, and I've been down to Houston a couple of times too, and I really like being down there as well.
Yeah,
yeah, I met you at a meeting several weeks ago, if I remember correctly.
Yes, we were down in the
sort of get acquainted
area,
meeting.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
One of the few meetings I missed, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was with the Pride office. You should have been there.
Well, so, Paul, first of all, we want to talk to you about Texas Pride, which is going to be taking place in Austin. And Jennifer and I were having this conversation of exactly when that is.
Well, our Pride Texas events occur over a three-week period this year, and we had our first event yesterday, which was our Sunday brunch, where we had Matt Foreman, the executive director of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, as our guest speaker. And this weekend, coming Saturday, June the 10th, we have our Pride Festival, where we have anywhere from 5,000 to 7,000 people come down for music, drink, and about over 110 vendors that represent various agencies, organizations, and businesses that support the GLBT community.
Mm-hmm. And then?
And then our final event is on Friday, June 17th, and that is our Women's Dance, and that's celebrating the diversity of our community and our lesbian women and supporters. And that is going to be at Fiesta Gardens, and that starts at 8 o'clock. And it's just a good night with a great DJ, and we'll be having a great time that evening. And usually around 500, 800 people that attend that event.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, if anybody is out there who wants to know more about this and just heard about it, how could they contact Equality?
The best way, we've got all of our events and all the information online at www.equalitytexas.org. Our Pride events are featured on our homepage. Or you can call our line at 512-474-5475. And like I said, most of the information, if not all of it, is actually on the website.
Oh, great, great. And give that website one more time.
It's equalitytexas.org, O-R-G.
All right, great. And what's planned during, is there anything during the week in between the weekends, or how is that, what's the activities during the week?
During the week, I think we're just resting for the most part, not from the weekends.
Storing up your energy, huh?
Storing up our energy. It's pretty intense. I know that we've got other events occurring. I know that Algo is having one of their dances after the Pride Fest this Saturday. And we had our parade this past Saturday night that the Chamber of Commerce, Austin Chamber of Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce sponsors. And we had a great turnout for that parade, and Equality Texas was one of the groups marching in that parade. And so we're really fortunate to have great support throughout the community for our events.
Well, other than for Pride, what is the Equality Texas, what is one of their functions, and what are they doing, working on now other than Pride?
Well, Equality Texas is the statewide lobbying organization where we work to eliminate discrimination based on sexual orientation as well as gender identity. And we've been in existence in some form since 1974, but we're incorporated in 1989, and we've been working on various issues. We were successful in working to get the James Byrd Hate Crimes Act passed to protect the community from hate crimes. We're also working to make sure that gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender parents can be foster parents as well as adopt. And currently, we don't have a specific ban against that, but we have, in the past four sessions, attempts made to try to ban from gays and lesbians being foster parents. and that would be a horrible thing to happen in our state. And we've worked successfully to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Most people don't realize that it's a quality of life situation nationally. Bringing businesses into this state, it would be, you know, when you have discrimination in your laws, a lot of companies won't come down here. Hello?
Okay. Do we still have you, Paul?
We lost him.
I don't even know if we have us. Are we on mic?
Hello? Yeah, you're on.
Oh, we're Earth good. To whatever.
You're there. We're trying to figure this out. Our phones are not cooperating with us.
Yeah, we're technical difficulties, the ever-famous technical difficulties. Well, let us know if Paul gets back in on the line. And in the meantime, I'll remind folks that this Thursday night at the Alley Theater is the final of this season of the Act Out series. And that's where they have a reception for GLBT folks and their friends, and that starts at 5:30, and then the play is, I think, at 7:30, and it's Agatha Christie's Witness for the Prosecution. And it's supposed to be just really wonderful. They had one of the actors got sick, and they had to delay the premiere and all of that. So it will be this Thursday, so there is time still to buy tickets, and just go to alleytheater.org or .com. If one doesn't work, try the other. And the other thing is, we had Stuart Zuckerbrod on a few weeks ago talking about his adaptation of Lucy Lestrada, which will be at Stages. There's a number of showings of the play that are fundraisers for different organizations, and then it runs, I have forgotten the exact run, but for several weeks there's opportunities, and you can go to Unhinged Productions and Google that or look up Stages Theater, and you will be able to find out all the information about how to get tickets and It just sounds hysterical.
It was a wonderful interview. I really enjoyed that. So if you can, get out and go see it.
Yeah, but there's so many things going on this month.
Yes, so you need to keep up with that. Go to the Pride website and look at the calendar.
Yeah.
If you don't have anything to do, it's your fault.
That's true. So do we have people back on the phones or not?
Yeah, we have Paul, yeah.
Okay, Paul.
Welcome back.
Sorry, we've been having some of those famous technical difficulties. So do you remember exactly where we were?
We were just finishing up talking about the foster care and adoption issue and what we're doing at Equality Texas.
Right. And is anything happening with this family marriage? Is that what it's called? Family Marriage Amendment?
It's the Marriage Protection Act is the official name.
Uh-huh.
Yes, we have been working for about 2 weeks with our supporters across the state to send letters to Senator Cornyn and to Senator Hutchinson to let them know how we feel about this Marriage Protection Act. And even though we know that they've decided that they're going to vote in favor of it, I don't think it's really...
Well, shame on them. Yeah, shame on them if they do.
Exactly. And you know, this is the first time in 217 years since the Constitution was ratified that we're going to be writing discrimination into our Constitution. And once again, the LGBT community is being the whipping dog for the extreme right and trying to get people to the polls. And they're using us and trying to take away our rights and take away our ability and our right to live our lives.
Mm-hmm. And to care for our families.
Well, exactly. And, you know, the president said today, you know, that it's important to protect marriage in order to protect families. Well,
let's just say George Bush. I hate even giving him the title because he doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, and I sometimes don't like saying his name.
Yeah. or looking at him or hearing his voice.
43. Say 43.
It's like that movie Candyman. If you say it five times in a mirror, then he'll appear in back of you.
Yeah. Now, that's scary.
It is scary.
You're right. Throughout history, the Constitution has been amended to expand and protect rights and liberties. And this is actually disenfranchising a group of people who are discriminated against and without due process. I mean, we're not felons. Of course, I'm sure they're going to try to find a way to make us be so that, you know, we can further, you know, be eroded and maybe herded into concentration camps.
Well since Lawrence, we're not felons anymore.
Right. Well, if you listen to their language, they keep on talking about, you know, that we need to protect the man and woman marriage and so that children can have the right environment in which to grow up. Well, this is just the beginning then, because if they think that's the case, then they're going to go after single parents next. They're going to go after definitely foster care and adoption issues for gays and lesbians. What's to stop them? What's to stop them from going to discrimination in the workplace and saying, okay, it's across the board. We don't need to give rights, any rights at all. We need to usurp all the rights that have been passed in some states, protecting people in their employment. And we need to kind of go forward on this and make sure that our families are protected. No one is speaking on behalf. I mean, the major organizations are, but nobody in the mainstream is talking about the LGBT families that are raising their kids.
Yes. Well, Paul, we thank you for being with us on Queer Voices, and sorry for the phone problems. We'll ask you to be on again, and especially as we get closer to the legislative session, some of the things that we might be looking at. But give again the contact information if people want to get involved with Texas Pride or Equality Texas.
Go to EqualityTexas.org. All the information is on the homepage. Everyone from Texas is invited this Saturday, June 10th, from 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. It's an eight-hour event. We've got great musical acts and lots of things to do down at Waterloo Park on 15th Street in downtown Austin. And then you can also come to the Women's Dance next week, June 17th, at Fiesta Gardens. You can purchase all your tickets online.
Thank you so much, Paul Scott, Executive Director of Equality Texas, for being with us on Queer Voices. And now we're going to go to NewsWrap from This Way Out.
I'm Charles Hall.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 3rd, 2006. It was during the first week of June 1981 that a strange new illness among sexually active gay men was first described. Initially labeled GRID, gay-related immune deficiency, HIV-AIDS has since affected some 65 million people of all sexual orientations and socioeconomic classes around the world, killing 25 million of them. But after 25 grim years, some nations still can't bring themselves to even mention the highest risk groups by name. The United States joined predominantly Islamic and Roman Catholic countries at a high-level UN conference on AIDS this week in New York City to oppose any final declaration about the disease that specified injection drug users, sex workers, or gay and bisexual men, ignoring a call to do so by UN Secretary General Kofi Annan as he opened the three-day conference on May 31st. "We need to be realistic," Annan had told reporters. "If we are here to try and end the epidemic and fight the epidemic, we will not succeed by putting our heads in the sand and pretending these people do not exist or do not need help." But opponents argued that drug use, prostitution, and homosexuality are illegal in many countries, and that specifically identifying these high-risk populations in the declaration might be construed as an endorsement. Using language appearing in similar declarations over the past 5 years, the document again references them only as vulnerable groups. Of the declaration, Aditi Sharma, HIV-AIDS campaign and policy coordinator for India-based Action Aid International, issued a statement saying in part, "We are furious. Vulnerable groups such as intravenous drug users, sex workers, and men who have sex with men have been made invisible by this document. It is incomprehensible how negotiators could come up with such a weak declaration." The stated goals of this week's conference were to review efforts to fight AIDS and prepare national plans to combat the virus over the next decade. The gathering came on the heels of a report issued by the UN AIDS office saying that world leaders had failed to meet many of the goals established in 2001 to fight the pandemic.
Human Rights Watch was among several groups this week to call for a full investigation by Russian authorities into the violence at last week's first-ever Pride March in Moscow. A mix of young nationalist skinheads and religious fundamentalists attacked the participants at two different locations, beating and kicking several and chanting, "Russia free of faggots, death to sodomites." Many more LGBT activists than their attackers were eventually arrested. Documenting the melee in a briefing paper released this week, Scott Long of Human Rights Watch said, "Police at first seemed to allow the skinheads and others free rein to assault lesbians and gays. When police finally intervened, they forced the two groups closer together, aggravating the violence," he said. "They failed totally to protect people peacefully trying to exercise their rights." Many of Moscow's religious leaders had vocally opposed the Pride March, some specifically threatening violence by their followers. Mayor Yuri Lushkov was equally adamant that no public demonstration by deviants be held, denying an official city permit for the parade, even as organizers were vowing to march without it. Human Rights Watch reports that internal documents from the mayor's office, it had seen, provide evidence that Lushkov had conducted a sustained campaign against LGBT people. In one memorandum, dated March 2006, Lushkov reportedly advised subordinates that it is necessary to take concrete measures to prevent holding public and mass gay events in the capital, instructing them to organize an active campaign in the mass media using appeals from citizens and religious and public organizations.
There's got to be concern about a similar scenario occurring at the next World Pride celebration scheduled for August in Jerusalem. Many of that city's Jewish, Muslim, and Christian leaders have spoken out against the event. Local Pride organizer Jerusalem Open House won an injunction last year against ultra-Orthodox Mayor Yuri Lupolyansky, who, like Moscow's Lushkov, had also sought to ban Pride events in his city. He's reportedly expressed concerns about clashes at this year's World Pride event between Jerusalem's secular and religious factions. But District Court Judge Judith Zur this week ordered city authorities to compensate Jerusalem Open House for failing to provide funding for local Pride events during the past 3 years there, as they do for other cultural events, ordering payments to organizers of 350,000 shekels, or about $77,000. Even if municipal officials have a hard time accepting the community and believe this is an unwanted phenomenon, she wrote, the municipality must treat this community equally out of recognition of the supreme values of tolerance and pluralism, which are at the core of democratic values. The Jerusalem World Pride Festival was originally planned for last year but postponed because it would have taken place during the tense Israeli pullout from the Gaza Strip. Organizers of the Pride Parade in Tel Aviv disappointed some by canceling this year's event and urging its residents to attend Jerusalem's global festival instead. The last World Pride event was held in Rome in 2000, despite vocal opposition by the Vatican, and attracted about 500,000 peaceful participants. Local organizers expect tens of thousands to attend the six-day event in Jerusalem, starting on August 6th, scheduled to include street parties, workshops, and a film festival.
Denmark's parliament this week passed a law allowing artificial insemination for lesbians and single women in the country's public hospitals. The vote followed heated debate over the issue, which has divided political parties and government officials between those who demand full equality for lesbians and gay men and those who advocate what they call traditional family values. 86 MPs supported the measure, 61 voted against, while 21 abstained, among them members of the government. Same-gender couples still don't have adoption rights in the country. Denmark was the first to legalize same-gender registered partnerships in 1989.
But Costa Rica's constitutional court has ruled 5-2 that lesbi-gay couples do not have a right to marriage. At the same time, the court urged legislatures to grant those couples justice and legal security by creating a way to regulate stable, loyal same-gender unions. Plaintiff Yashen Castrillo, a gay lawyer, sought to have the Costa Rica Family Code's heterosexual definition of marriage declared unconstitutional. He said he will appeal the ruling to the Inter-American Court of Human Rights.
Canadian equality activists are upset with Statistics Canada's 2006 National Census form. The document instructs legally married same-gender couples to use the other category to record their relationship rather than ticking the husband or wife box. Statistics Canada claims that it hasn't had time to change the form since same-gender marriages were legalized nationwide last July. They have been legal in Ontario since June of 2003, in British Columbia since July 2003, and in Quebec since April of 2004. Gemma Hickey, president of the national lobby group EGAL, said the census treats gays and lesbians as second-class citizens. Canada conducts a national census every 5 years.
For the second time in 2 years, Colorado's Republican Governor Bill Owens has vetoed a bill to add sexual orientation and gender identity to the state's workplace anti-discrimination code, claiming that the bill had the potential to be costly for Colorado businesses. Even though the state still has no basic employment bias protections, Coloradans will vote this November on a referendum that would offer domestic partnerships with many of the benefits of marriage to same-gender couples. The proposal by the Democratic-controlled legislature did not require the governor's approval. Up to three other initiatives could share the November ballot with the legislature's domestic partner plan. One would specifically outlaw same-gender marriage, another would ban civil unions, and a third, drafted by equality advocates, guarantees that the domestic partner plan would take effect, if approved by voters, regardless of the outcome of any of the other initiatives. Proponents of each of the three initiatives are currently gathering signatures on petitions to qualify them for the ballot.
And finally, Batwoman will again be coming out of her Batcave. Literally, as a lesbian. The original superhero first appeared in DC Comics in 1956 and was killed off in 1979. This is not just about having a gay character, says Dan DiDio, vice president and executive editor at DC. We're trying for overall diversity in the DC universe. We have strong African-American, Hispanic, and Asian characters. We're trying to get a better cross-section of our readership and the world. The 2006 version of Batwoman, just as with her earlier incarnation, The Secret Identity of Kathy Kane, is scheduled to appear this July in 52, a year-long DC Comics publication that recently made its debut. She's a rich Gotham City socialite who has a romantic history with another 52 character, former police detective Renee Montoya. The new series is set in a world where superheroes like Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman are no longer a presence. The new Batwoman will have flowing red hair, knee-high red boots with spiked heels, and a form-fitting black outfit. Opinions about the new Batwoman on websites devoted to DC Comics have ranged from outrage to approval. Some have taken a more light-hearted approach. Asked one poster, wouldn't ugly people as heroes be more groundbreaking?
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 3, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Charles Hall.
And this is Deborah Bell.
And Jennifer Renee.
And we're saying goodbye. We want to thank all our guests tonight, David Elliott, Linda Inger, Ellen Cohen, Joan Devlin and her guest, and apologies for the technical difficulties, Paul Scott of Equality Texas. Join us next week with Corbin of www.trannyboy.com with Ellie and Jennifer, and the Australian duo Blue House, who will be performing at the Mucky Duck on June 13th. They'll be here live in the studio, and we'll have another interview with Joan.
Good night.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 7 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, and Jack Valensky, with remote correspondents Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. For more information about guests, events, and organizations mentioned in the show, visit queervoices.org. Some of the music you heard is listed or available on J.D. Doyle's website, queermusicheritage.org. Be sure to listen every Saturday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude.
This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Once every month for a year at the Rothko Chapel, teachers from 12 different religious faiths will share their contemplative traditions with participants during each meditation. Each presentation will offer participants the chance to learn more about a different tradition, observe it, and in many cases participate in the meditative practice. All are welcome to attend. This month's meditation will be held on June 13, 2006, from noon to 1 p.m. at the chapel. This month's focus is Christian and will be led by Carla Cooper. The meditation series is being offered in collaboration with the Young Center of Houston, Interfaith Ministries of Greater Houston, and Ligminsha, Texas. To RSVP and to see additional dates for this series, please visit the website www.rothkochapel.org or call 713-524-9839. KPFT Houston.
Al Gore, the 45th Vice President of the United States, will appear on Wednesday, June 7th at the Hobby Center at 7:30. He will present a visually stunning multimedia presentation entitled Global Warming, An Inconvenient Truth. Copies of his new book, also called An Inconvenient Truth, will be available with a book signing at the end of the evening. Al Gore's presentation is an inspiring, nonpartisan message on the urgent need to solve global warming with solutions that strengthen our economy and way of life. For more information and tickets, go online at progressiveforumhouston.org or call 713-315-2525. That's Al Gore, June 7th at the Hobby Center. Online at progressiveforumhouston.org or 713-315-2525. 90.1 KPFT, Houston, Texas.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.